Good morning, good evening, depending upon what part of the world you're in. If it's Friday, you know, it is the CEO series where we bring together interesting people to talk about their careers, entrepreneurs, leaders in organizations. And it's always interesting because they drop so many nuggets as to how they got to the so proverbial top of the pyramid. Our guest today is Jose Ferreira Pinto. Lisbon native with a rich background spanning the food industry and tourism regulations. He and I worked together in Macau three, four years ago, whatever it was. He left corporate and now he's a passionate educator, researcher. So he pulled his other skills into play and kind of made somewhat of a detour. So Jose, good to see you, man.
Nice to see you too, Ron.
So I'm glad to have you here. So we always start the show with talking about your career. How did you get to where you are today? So give us kind of a walkthrough of the new version of 3.0.
Wow. Yes, when I was 40, I was saying my software is being upgraded to the 4.0. I just upgraded the 5.0 version of me.
Okay, so 5.0.
Yeah. So basically, I was my role was an educator in the food industry. That's where I started my career. Came to Macau, work in the government as a regulator, and then move on to one of the biggest, one of the six gaming concession holders in Macau, where I started my career in HR for hotel pre-opening. And following that, my role was more on consolidating service standards and then developing continuous process improvement, etc. And I end up this area with a lot of questions because working in such a big and diverse organization. So I was always curious trying to find answers to those questions I had. Because everything that people would say when I started applying, it wasn't as clear. So that developed kind of like research bug in me. I was always asking questions, trying to find answers. And it became kind of a trait, which connected well with the step I took further in getting deep into how to do research, which is basically ask good questions and find the answers to it.
I know that when we first met and had our conversation, and I often wondered that HR person, so you think of the brand of HR, and the level of conversation we were having was way above a normal HR kind of conversation. I mean, your office was, you know, with the posters and the process flows and all these kinds of things. And I've always been intrigued by that because this is making a change and moving from one. You say you started in HR and you moved to something else. So what were some of the key learnings from getting you to the point you're at today?
Well, key learnings were from the corporate to academia, right? So I think the key thing was that we depart usually, especially in HR, from a set of tools or a corollary of assumptions that we consider that would be applicable across the organizations. And my experience actually made it more contextual. So of course we need to have a baseline where we depart from, but then it's really contextual on how you implement whatever you're talking about. So if you're developing a talent management program, if you're looking at the succession plan, if you're working with safety at work and you're trying to convince people that's not good for them if they have a work incident, to more basic stuff where you have teams, really diverse teams, which was the environment I was working with. And the second one is visualization. So to overcome some of the communications and cross-cultural issues we have, I took some of the skills I had before because I took like a 3-year course of artistic drawing in Portugal still, and I use it for graphic facilitation. So I started with baby steps. I went to San Francisco to the groove to learn how to do facilitation, and then move on with Bicablo, which is more a methodology to really put into practice and continue that study, those studies in Singapore. And afterwards, I met a wonderful lady that works with Otto Schammer from TUDU, Kelvin Bird, that introduced me to generative scribing. And it kind of came at the right time in everything else I have done.
Just kind of connected from that. Because I know the first time I walked into your office, I'm like, whoa, look at all of the graphics and all these things. And I think, matter of fact, I want to say this now. You gave me quite a few as I was leaving. And I still have those today to do that. So I'm always concerned about how people are, you know, you're great at what you do, but you decide to take kind of a slight detour and move into something else. So that kind of, I'm going to say detour of, you know what, I'm doing this now, I'm in HR, but I want to move to something. What was the trigger that kind of started that?
Essentially two. So I regularly do some what I call a career assessment using some of the tools that actually are available in my book, which is basically Ikigai, and I also use a Canvas to look at what I'm doing and look at the present and how I can add value to where I am. And as I was doing that, it came to my awareness, I would say. It was clear to me that I need to search something else outside the organization. So during that path, I met a lot of people and created a new network that introduced me to new things beyond the realm of the organization I was working. And that was kind of like the spark that started everything. We started, as you said, visually. So basically, I was not alone. I was with someone else. And I challenge him, I just draw a 3-meter line, and we get these flip chart papers glued on the wall, and I draw a line. And I said, for the next 3 years, I want to do something different. And we're looking at the organization, what can we anticipate?
That's powerful, because so many people today are going through challenges with work and afraid of being laid off, or all these things are coming inside of the workplace. How would you counsel someone who is going through the motions, knowing there's something else, but maybe a little too timid to try something?
Well, it depends a lot on the context, of course. But as a broad question, if it's a coachable moment, that will be a great opportunity for you to do a reflective and then planning conversation. So. Not much on my organizational coaching skill, but more on the last part of the coaching I really love. It's called cognitive coaching, which I found in education, pretty well developed in the US on what is called the adaptive school curriculum. Actually in Dubai, there's a couple of cognitive coaches. Okay. And the idea is basically to position yourself in a sense that what makes sense, even in this coaching conversation, sometimes you need to play the role of a consultant, which in organizational coaching is like forbidden. But if you actually ask the question, look, can we just stop this coaching conversation for a while? And let me share with you something of my own experience that would benefit, I think, both of us, me, because I'm going to reinforce something I believe I trust it's good for you. And also it will add value for you to place it into your context. So it's kind of like a game between coaching, consulting, sometimes mediating the thought process. And it's engaging because you play around these what they call the crucible in coaching, right? So career-wise, in answering your question, there are elements that are very clear on if you want to make a change. So I do believe that you need to build up your network in advance, and you need to be focusing on what are the key activities you need to have. And then the path to that transformation is how then you introduce yourself. So I'm a newbie. I'm an academic. I'm a professor now, right? So how, what I was thinking about was, how am I going to introduce myself? How do I position myself in the, in as a professor now, with the academic background? Okay, and it's not easy, because when you think about academia, it's a completely different ecosystem. Right? So you leverage in one way, you assess in another way. In corporate, it's completely different. Right?
Yeah. But, you know, I think that's an easier sell. I'm thinking from my side, the storytelling pieces, because of the fact, if I was a corporate executive, successful corporate executive, and now I'm transitioning into this new phase, I bring a lot more than a academic who's been doing that for 20 years. That's my thinking. Would that sell?
Yes. I see myself as a professor of practice, so I do want to keep myself connected to the industry, because I think it's a spark to research, and it's extremely important on what I want to do as an academic in the future. And therefore, for me, is key, that component.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, please. Yes, Ron.
What I was thinking about was, you mentioned, what's always a key word for me is reflection. And that the Ron Thomas thinking is that I don't think people do enough of that, reflecting about how was your day? I mean, really reflecting, how was the presentation I just did? How was the show I just did? How can I get better? So kind of a self-coaching kind of approach, is that?
Well, you can do that kind of metacognitive, it's called metacognitive, this fancy word. But it's basically, what are the things we've done before? Which I think is start a diary. And actually, one of the things I've been doing as an academic, I have more time. I have a simple agenda. And every day I write something about basically what happened, what am I grateful for, and what have I learned. And I try to answer these three questions. And I actually tell my kids as well to do so. It's really powerful, because you write with your own hand. So it's not, I'm an old school in that area, which now neuroscience has backed my fears of too much digitalization. Yes, and therefore that connects also to the visualization I search and the way I express my ideas. So to kind of close everything in a loop of what I said, reflective, using drawing sometimes helps you a lot to connect and create powerful ideas. And that reflection really helps you to set yourself in the present. So most of us are really focusing too much on the future, which can cause a lot of anxiety, and are too much overburdened with stress from the past. And we forget to live the present. So this reflection allows you to really get yourself in the moment. And that helps you to improve, I think.
I call that the luggage. I said, we all have this luggage on our back. It's like the backpack. When do you take the backpack and put it aside and begin a new thought process? But my thinking, the word for that is called journaling. In other words, you always write things down. And at any time you see me, I always have a pad and I'm making notes to myself. I mean, I have the Apple Notes that I use, but I take my journaling and put it in the Apple Notes to make sure I don't forget it. That's old school kind of thinking.
Yes. Neuroscience is actually in some schools now in the northern part of Europe, because they're considered the experts in education, also are going back to getting things written, because we actually develop our brain with these beautiful fingers and the tactile sense and help to develop the brain. So we by typing on the keyboard, we don't have, and neither we develop that ability to explore new things as it is. And I think this connects to other things that I've been talking about with my son, with my friends on how can we get people to have such a diverse array of reactions to something that before it was more common and acceptable, right? And this, I think, is connected to more virtual life than the real life, the life that we experience through tears, through pain, through enduring through that experience in the real world, But unfortunately, we have a competition from the screens where we spend a huge part of our time online in the virtual world, which still we still can't have the same type of stimulus. I know that Elon Musk is working on Neuralink to get to that, and for sure we'll get that level of sensations. But until we do so, I think we're living these quick transition times that it's really critical for us to remain human, you know. And going back to the reflection, I was also trained for a while. And so there was, when I was implementing part of these lean methodologies, I worked with a gentleman that was critical for my development, DJ Watt, which I'm thankful, and I hope he's listening to this. And he was, honestly, it was a pain at the beginning, because it was like we having a meeting with executives, and he would sit next to me and he wouldn't say anything. At the end of the meeting, he said, "What happened? Did you see what happened?" And it was not about what people said. It was really about what people did not say. So immediately we know from the start, if we wanted to deploy any initiative and start a change process, whatever you're thinking about, we knew how and who we had to do it, and with who we had to do it fast, so we can gain the confidence and trust and slowly build up that change across the department.
Yeah, you know, one of the things you mentioned there that really took me off for a second was the fact that sitting in that meeting, the person next to you doesn't say anything. But I've always told people when they come to me after the meeting, I said, no, say it inside. No meeting after the meeting, bringing up and have the discussion inside. We're all adults and we just have the discussion. I don't want to hear any meeting after the meeting. And that was always my rule.
Yes, yes. Nowadays, I think there's also science that backs up back-to-back meetings also can have a not so good effect on us in our ability to keep rational, right? And at least consistent across the day.
So how do we advise organizations whose people are meeting, on meeting, on Zoom, all these kind of things?
Well, there are all sorts of things they can do. One thing that I think is important is time the time you're engaged, but also time the time that you space. So there's a, unfortunately, I can't recall the name, but the Neuro Leadership Institute actually has a model for learning. It's called AGES. So the Italian lady that is a professor, she's a professor at New York University, if I'm not wrong. She came up with this model, and this model is called AGES: A for attention, G for generation, E for emotion, and then S for spacing. So the whole learning process goes around this, and they go around companies to assess the way training is provided and if they provide spacing. So most important thing is to allow the brain to connect. So I was listening to a podcast recently from a lady that is a neuroscientist as well. Her name is Tara Schon. And I can get the exact title of the book she's publishing soon. I think the book just came out on October the 4th, so a couple of days ago. And she was talking about this importance of how we actually find these moments to create silence, or in these meetings and context, corporate context, board executives, they need to have a breather. So sometimes we see a sequence of hours, but no one is actually there to assess the quality of decision making and some other signs that are not actually verbal that would determine it's time for a break. Now, these people are used to be there for hours and they are trained to do so, right? Trained for by life. So I think there are teams that actually play games, which is not necessarily at board level because they think it's not fancy. But I've seen it. I would say the younger generation is open to that. But essentially the break from screen. So that means you will have to stop for a while looking at the screen. So that your brain has actually time to process the information. And going back to the lady, process information. So brain, the brain creates new connections. The brain improves the existing connections, okay? And then chemically, the brain needs time to solidify that pathway, okay? That's why we need rest. That's why we need sleep, and that's why we need spacing.
Yeah, the 3 H, right? You know, that's it's amazing as to what you were talking about, because one of the and I notice about you, you enjoy walking, you enjoy nature and all those things. And I remember right after COVID, I started walking, and I'd walk 7 miles every morning, and I just walked. And but I found that when I walked for 7 miles along Dubai Creek, I had better clarity when I got back to the desk to do work. Walk us through that nature kind of a connection from your side, because I know you're big on that.
Oh, there's a lot, I would say. Oh my God. So the
a quick one.
Yeah, well, it's our human nature, okay? We evolve through the contact with nature. Nature's shaped us. So it's not, it's as simple as that. And that connection to nature is also a connection to ourselves. So the walking, as you mentioned, in taking walking as an example, is an extremely good exercise, because it's not too, you don't have too much effort that you need to be concentrated on your survival breathing, right? But you have enough of an effort to get your blood circulating and energize yourself to the day that is coming. And I think the contact with nature and the exercise itself, moderate, is really powerful. And the science behind it now is, now that we have all these contraptions to measure everything our body has, we get more and more evidence of that. Mm-hmm. But it's connection is about connecting again ourselves with nature.
Okay. Say hello to some of our frequent guests. Muhammad, Marvin Keys is here. Jim Moy is here. John Self is here. Regular people that tend to come in on our session every Friday. So as you made the transition out of the corporate side to get into more of the educator, and we talked about making this U-turn, was it a big leap? Or you was something that was always there, a yearning when you were on the corporate side to say, oh, you know, let me just go ahead and try this for now, or plan B, so to speak.
Well, in corporate, you don't have a lot of time to really go deep into the thinking process. It's about doing, executing, and I was interested in looking at other opportunities aside from in experimenting new things. So that came a little bit after my first, I would say, it's almost like an initiation process, because the first time I entered in contact with complexity science, and it was through a video I watched Dave Snowden. And Dave Snowden is a guru in the area of strategic management in IT. And I was amazed. So I went to New Zealand, and complexity science was like, first I had like a whoa. And then that was really, I like experimenting new things, and complexity was about making sense and trying different things at the same time to see what works, not necessarily departing from.
Yeah.
So when we started implementing Agile in HR, and I had this argument with my boss at the time, was like, look, but Agile, they use it when they have no clue what's going to be the end product. So in HR, it's not like that. You know the policy, and there's a bunch of rules, and you got to follow them.
You're the police.
So it was like, but it was a great introduction when we had to implement that in HR, not only the struggle, because we have that. We found out that for certain projects in HR, if you really want to create an amazing employer brand, or you want to connect better the corporate brand to the employee brand, which is usually the key, then this is something you can think about. These agile methodologies can help. And that was kind of like the transition that helped me a lot to experiment and connected more to the research, which we don't have a lot of time in corporate. And aside from that was the passion and pleasure of looking at people in the haha moments. So in corporate, you have less of those haha moments because people need to keep their demeanor. They're executives in a large corporation. In university, you do see that contribution. So it was a, it's like an inspiring moment I get every time you see they have contributed to someone's understanding of something, or somehow how they see life in a different way that will make their life easier or simpler, or I don't know, a better understanding of what they do.
Yeah. So you mentioned the corporate side, you know, results. Do this, results. How do you make a business case for this agile approach as to so that they could possibly link this to business results, an increase in business results, whether that be revenue, market share, whatever it would be, a net profit, whatever it would be? How could we talk to a senior executive to have this kind of a conversation when they're looking for, I need it by Friday or by the end of the month?
Yes. There is a conflict, as you mentioned, between the people that have to actually accomplish the tasks and the ones that have to understand the tasks and think about the tasks and are wishing for the results to appear. So in the hospitality, I can tell you, this is not new. The professor Mintzberg, he mentions that the fact that most of the companies, when they do an IPO, they need to produce quarterly reports and that engages the organization. Depending on the size, obviously, that has consequences. Imagine to cascade down a new orientation for like 130,000 employees. Yeah. So, and that puts a real, I would say, a lot of weight on executive shoulders to get things, as they say, done or manage, which is, yes. So, yeah, it's interesting. I think to answer your question, I lived through two completely different times in terms of corporate. One was when we're doing opening of large organizations. And at that time was actually getting it done regardless of some of the, regardless of the effort people would have to devote to get things done. Mm-hmm. And as time passed by, the organization also aged and got more mature. So when we did the second opening, it was different. When the organization did the third opening, was even more mature. Okay. In the sense that they were more concerned on how to do more with less, so using existing resources. Mm. And as you said, to find out the third alternative. So most of the people are, so creativity over capital is the key word. The key is, I would say, motto on these. But seldom that sentence is put on the table to deploy. And I think your question is rather contextual because it depends how large your organization is, at what stage of development they are. So, and we see that organizations go through different cycles of development, right? And the people, as you said, depending on the outflow of the type and the profile of people that leave the organization changes, and I observe that. So it's rather contextual to the organization, but in a simple way, I would say the key point is to really understand with the people in the, so top down, bottom up. Mm-hmm. You have to connect those two. And if you connect those two, it's a key to success. So it's like, this is like a bit of a platitude, top down, bottom up, but we often do a lot of top down, not much of bottom up.
Yeah.
And bottom up really sets us in the present and into the reality of what can really be achieved. So we set the expectations right. And when time has come for an earnings call and we have to do it, We're able to say, yes, we deploy that. And sometimes we have delayed these to the second quarter. Yeah. Mm.
I wrote an article two, three weeks ago for the Economic Times of India. And I focus on exactly what you said. Organizations have been used to, and I'm going to use my metaphor for that, was the adult to child relationship. This is what you need to do versus the adult to adult relationship. This is what we need. What are your thoughts on it? We collaborate on a solution to that. And I thought about that when you mentioned creativity over capitalism, because the buzzword is capitalism, 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 but creative people drive that. And I'll tell one more story, and then I'm going to turn it over to you. I was in Islamabad, which I go to every year, a couple of times a year, and it was a Leaders in Islamabad Summit, and the entire conversation was CEOs talking about strategy, strategy, strategy. We're here, we're going here, we're going here. And I'm thinking, no one mentioned the people side of this to make this happen, that you got to have the right people with the right skills, right time, right mindset, all of that. And no one covered that. So I was the opening keynote day two, and I nailed it because I concentrated on that. I said, I heard all the big talk, as my father would say, but I heard no middle. I heard no middle in talking about the creative side, the people side, them being creative, having the freedom to be creative without fearing that they may be tamped down if they said the wrong thing. What are your thoughts on that?
I have also a life example. So you know that the gaming world is shifting depending on government opportunities and what is provided, etc. And you know, in Asia, there's a kind of a race for that, in Thailand, Japan, etc. It doesn't matter the location. But at a certain location in Asia, they were looking at different resorts possibilities, and all the contestants were actually, every participant was trying to actually present the case, the business case, from investment perspective, facilities, assets, etc., etc. The difficult question came when someone asks, okay, the reality of this area is I have an age population density, population density is low, so that means they have to travel 1-2 hours to arrive to that location. Wages are actually pretty high comparing to other locations in Asia. So how are you going to structure and organize to open a resort with 10,000 employees, okay? Yeah. So and that's when everyone, you hear the room like, and so that question came like a bomb, is to put the people in everything we do. So by all means, all the initiatives I've developed so far, the centerpiece were people, and to even sometimes against my own career, I actually was asked to develop something, and kind of they were giving me the solution for the evolution itself. And I said, well, you know what, I really appreciate your perspective on that. As you can see, I like to look at these as your perspective, but we're missing all the other perspectives of the same situation. So let me get back to you a few days after, once I've talked to everyone in the department, and then we'll decide if it makes sense even doing something about it at this moment. Because there is a time for change, right? Yeah. And sometimes, no, it needs to be now. Well, you can try. You waste resources, and then nothing happens.
Yeah. And so go ahead.
So I think the patience is extremely important. And sometimes the struggles and I had were most of them, they were actually initiated by the fact that I was thinking like, an executive at a higher level, this needs to be driven like that. And sometimes you need to back off and be able to sense and to find that empathy to look at people and understand to what extent I can go any further. Mm.
And you know, this happens to a lot of us if we're in the so-called the HR function. I'm going to say the people function. You know, someone sent me a note the other week and they said, I need you to come in and do leadership development training. I said, and what does that look like? Well, we just need to send everybody out for leadership development training. I said, based on what? Well, you know, the leader said that we need to put our people through based on, and I kept drilling down and I said, you know what, let's just stop this. I knew this person very well. I said, let me send you kind of a questioning strategy and read through this document I'm going to send you, and then we'll have a discussion. I said, because I can just fill an order and go in there and slap it on you and you pay me my fee and I can walk away, but I don't want to do that. I don't do that kind of work.
Yes, definitely. If you work as a consultant, and I was doing that internally as an internal consultant, the organization was big enough for that. And I found myself in those situations sometimes. It's like in coaching, when you interrupt to become a consultant or a mentor, when you put the storytelling element, and the key point is to a bridge is built from two sides, okay? So if you want to build a bridge from one side only, sometimes it will take longer and it will take much more resources. So like a gardener, if you seed it well, then you get the crops that you want, the plants, the flowers. And I think that metaphor also applies here. Sometimes a book, the questionnaire is more direct and strict because most executives really don't have the time to read through a book. But anyway, now they have ChatGPT that can summarize that. Like our video, right? We can just click and have it on five bullet points and everything will be there. So, but that's great. I mean, it's fantastic. We can do that. Yeah. So, yeah, I think I've answered your question.
I'm a sucker for metaphors. I love a bridge is built from both sides. Oh, my God. I'm going to send you a royalty check every time I use that. I love that. Because sometimes you have to... You know, you have to use metaphors for people to understand that, you know. And I say, if you're here and you need to get here, how are you going to get across the bridge? And that's what kind of resonated to me, you know, as you have been able to, you know, make that, have that conversation. So let's get back to you. Tell us about important influences in your life. I mean, who was an anchor? Who kind of... Even to this day, you tend to think back to some of the key learnings you had growing up.
You know, last month, I can tell you, if you go back to my childhood when I was extremely shy, but to a point I couldn't address a girl, you know. I was raised and educated in
a Catholic situation to be in, man.
It was like I couldn't handle it. But then there was this math teacher. And he changed the way I think, you know. And at that time, for me, it was not just about the mathematics, but it was about life. So she was, I will always remember. So if there's any Portuguese in the audience, her name is Fernanda Santinho Horta. She's not among us, but I'm thankful to her. Of course, my dad. I didn't know this, and I'm going to tell you a story. When I start learning about complexity, I was really struggling the experimental part, you know, trying to make sense of these. Oh, my God. Then I realized when I went fishing with my dad, and I know if you probably have been fishing as well. So you never rely on one set. You got to bring different rods, different lures, different types of bait, and you got to try what's on it on that day, right? So you got all the cues. And until recently, I was telling my dad that once I finished I think it was the day after I defend my thesis. And I was telling my dad that, you know, you're always saying that, maybe my influence was as a very strict parent, etc. I said, no. If we go back to my childhood, I spent a lot of time with you fishing. And here's what he taught me. When you approach something, if you want to know something, first, number one, you have no clue what kind of fish you're going to hook. So this is number one, okay? So uncertainty. Number two, you got to try different things. There's no way with this ambiguity. You just have one type of tool in your life, your career, to achieve that. And then number three is persistence, because if you've been fishing, you know it's not easy. You spend a few hours.
But yeah,
you find your spot and you find your way. Yes.
Yeah.
So, and then later on, more specific in my career, of course, DJ Duarte, already mentioned him. obviously my boss before, Mr. Ramirez, Antonio Ramirez, who was a visionary and was innovative enough to develop different initiatives in HR that no one had heard before.
Okay.
And that, I think, was before we actually met. So, and in that sense, I'm thankful and grateful for that. Okay. And of course, other people I've worked with, Jeremy that you met, Jeremy Busfield.
Jeremy.
He was like my sounding board every time I had these ideas and I read research articles. And you know what? I just read this and Jeremy said, oh no, Jose. Yeah. So we had really serious conversation about
that's Jeremy, about yeah. What,
yes, it was an interesting corporate life.
Okay.
And now in academia, I also have other people that have helped me, which endured through a new pathway, which is academia and your doctorate and fighting with yourself, you know, and realizing that you can overcome the hardest tasks. I think that that's what, if there's something that doctorate teaches you is grit. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I know we can spend some time on the math teacher to be the math teacher giving you the confidence to move forward with girls. That will be another discussion, you know, offline, online, whatever it is. But that sounds like a cool combination. You know, I'd love to one of the things that I've noticed since we've known each other goes back 6-5 years or whatever it is. You always use strong metaphors, fighting with yourself. And I hear people use that in kind of a surrounding kind of technique. They may not use that, but they're fighting with themselves daily because they said, I should have done better. And it's just constantly beating themselves up and I'm not good enough for this and I'm not good enough for that. That tends to be a common concept today. Have you found that from your side and more research side?
Yes, definitely. We also have pressure in academia to publish and write. So we do feel that as well in a different way, of course, because it's more reflective, it's mental. You do less. Actually, I would love to build a research paper like a Lego box, you know. You take it from the box and you build something. That would improve our thinking process. But unfortunately, it's just a pen and a paper. And sometimes what I try to do, which reverses a little bit the conflict. So that it's like an elastic band. We want to stretch it, but we don't want to break it, right? Mm. So it's gratitude. It's really the reflection about what you have achieved as a person so far, regardless of what you've done. If you think about sports, if you think about your profession, right? And now CrossFit is really as a sport that really asks you about milestones and what are your personal records and I kind of laugh about it because it's, oh my God, you're going back to my swim trainings when I was 15, you know, you had the time, you had everything. It was like you did extra a few seconds more. So I think it's gratitude is again the reflection time. You stop for a while and ask yourself, what am I grateful for so far? And that it really helps you a lot, ease some of the conflicts you feel when you have to drive change in large organizations or when you have to push through a difficult task or learn something new, things that you like, oh my God, I'm going to get lost.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And friends, of course, help. Your circle of friends in connects to your circle of influence in a way that both interact to make you a better person. Yeah.
Okay, cool. You know, one of the goals of the show is on the CEO series is to create a platform to bring together interesting people, you know, like yourselves and talk about their careers, you know, and I always tell people, it's just talking about you and your careers. There's no big scheme of things. And I really appreciate you for making the time. Where are you located? Are you in Portugal now or Macau?
I am in Macau at this moment.
You're in Macau. What time is it there now?
9:45.
Okay, I'll see you soon. I got some work coming up in Hong Kong next year, so I'm going to come over and we spend some time together. So getting back to the CEO series, you brought out the full mission of what the show is about. Are there any takeaways you want to give the audience being on the show or about how do you understand yourselves better?
Well, I wrote about it in my book that I recently published.
That book is called?
Oh, From Efficiency to Well-Being.
Okay.
So, yeah, it kind of sets the tone that my focus was on getting revenue and all the metrics that fit into quality, cost, delivery, safety, and whatever metric you want to put in. But bottom line was, if I've been able to make a difference in people's life, that really has improved value. So what is value creation for them? And if I contribute to that, because value is a currency that sits on the other person, not in you. We tend to assess it, but value is what people credit for what it is worth, anything you would like to give them. That's it.
Thank you so much, man.
Great talking to you, Ron, as always.
Always good to talk to you. And I see you in Macau in 2024. Everything works out. Yes. So hang on for a minute as we close out.